Hello, hello. I'm Brittany Luce, and you're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, a show about what's going on in culture and why it doesn't happen by accident. The other day, I was scrolling NPR's homepage, and I saw a story that absolutely stopped me in my tracks. An AI video of a manslaughter victim was used to address his killer in a court of law.
Hello. Just to be clear for everyone seeing this, I am a version of Chris Pelkey recreated through AI that uses my picture and my voice profile.
So I called up NPR digital news reporter Juliana Kim to learn more about what happened.
So back in 2021, a man named Christopher Pelkey was shot and killed in a road rage incident. His case initially went to court in 2023, but it had to be retried because of some procedural issues. And it's why it took until this month for the man who shot him to face sentencing. And during this whole time, Christopher's sister, Stacey Wales, had been mulling over what she would say in her victim impact statement, which is a chance for loved ones to talk about their grief before the judge hands down a sentence.
What would you say if you only had one last chance to speak up for your brother, to sum up a life?
She told me that while she was at a loss for words, it was clear what her brother would say. So she asked her husband and their business partner, both of whom have experience using AI, to help. Her plea was this.
This whole trial is about him, because of him, and for him. And he doesn't get a say? He doesn't get a chance to speak? We have to give him a voice.
They only had a few days and had to source a bunch of different AI tools, but in the end, they actually pulled it off. And the message that Stacey really wanted the judge and her brother's killer to hear, it was all about forgiveness.
To Gabriel Horcasitas, the man who shot me. It is a shame we encountered each other that day in those circumstances. In another life, we probably could have been friends. I believe in forgiveness and in God who forgives. I always have. And I still do. Thank you to everyone for being here. It means more than you know. Well, I'm gonna go fishing now. Love you all. See you on the other side.
Now, what's so interesting to me about this story is that it feels like the start of a new relationship between AI and the law.
Neither the defense nor the judge pushed back, surprisingly. And later in the hearing, Judge Todd Lang said he actually loved the use of AI. He said he usually sticks to last names in court, but after hearing from the family and seeing the video, he felt compelled to call Chris by his first name. And what really stood out to the judge was that, you know, the family themselves were asking for the maximum sentence, but the AI rendering of Chris didn't talk about punishment. And in the end, the judge actually gave the maximum sentence.
I want to know, how will it change our relationship to the law? And what are the broader impacts we might see on our culture?
The story makes me reflect a lot on mortality and AI's role in possibly changing kind of what it means to grieve and remember.
I'm joined by Juliana, who you just heard.
Hi there.
And Professor Brandon Blankenship, an assistant professor and director of the pre-law program at the University of Alabama at Birmingham.
Thanks for having us.
So, Juliana, tell me the rest of the story of this AI video. Why did Stacey feel so strongly about making it?
It was clear from talking to Stacey that she was really close to her brother. You know, he lived with her at one point and even walked her down the aisle at her wedding. One of the reasons Stacey felt so strongly about humanizing Chris was because she said the main images of her brother shown during the trial was of him getting shot on the road and his autopsy photo.
That's so sad. Yeah.
Yeah, she was keenly aware of the great power and responsibility that comes with AI. You know, while working on the script, she kept checking in with herself, making sure that what she wrote reflected him, his Facebook posts, his go-to phrases, and not just what she wanted him to say.
Interesting. Okay, so why is this different from other attempts to bring AI into the courtroom? Brandon, I'd love to hear from you.
Well, American courts are really structured around due process. And if the prosecution puts together a case, for example, using AI, and the defense wants to go back and duplicate what the prosecution did to test the results, to ensure that due process was followed on the part of the prosecutor, there's really no way to test that. And so courts are highly suspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, talking to other legal experts, it sounds like this is the first case, at least in the U.S., of using AI to create a victim impact statement. A lot of times when it's used in the courtroom, it's kind of in this concealed manner, and then they get caught.
Mm.
But in this case with Stacey, right, the video opens up with an avatar essentially saying, this is not the real Chris, and this was made using AI.
The law, though, is ultimately about how we relate to each other as human beings, like person to person. And AI is famously not human. So what would it mean for AI to get more into the legal mix than just this one case, this one time?
I mean, you're right there at the boundary of, you know, law and ethics. But I think the evidence rules altogether, if you just look at them comprehensively, they're really designed to make sure that anything that comes into court is truthful, is just, and, for example, relevant to the actual case, and that it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can utilize AI to make it more just, credible, truthful, and fair, that's a good thing. Like in the case where someone has a disability that does not allow themselves, you know, they can't communicate for themselves, but they have more control over what the AI avatar is actually saying and their expression, but they couldn't do that same level of communication. I think that has huge potential in courts. And from the victim statement point of view, if we want to be fair to victims and people who might be eligible for parole, then maybe a video attendance at those hearings is more fair. Because it's difficult for the victim to return every so many years and retell the same story and be re-traumatized in the same way.
Mm.
And so if the AI tool could help a victim communicate themselves, express what happened truthfully, then I think there's great use there. Where it's used to distort those things, then it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I think just kind of to Brandon's point, right? In Stacey's case, the point that she wanted to make using AI was about forgiveness. But people down the line who might be using AI in a similar way might have a more malicious intent.
Are there other cans of worms this opens up?
Just from a humanization point of view, who owns my digital persona?
Coming up, the broader implications of AI renderings after death, both in and out of the courtroom.
I happened to be redoing my will when I was having this conversation with you guys, and I decided I'm going to add a statement in there that says this is who I want in control of my digital persona once I pass away.
Stick around. Are there other cans of worms this opens up?
Just from a humanization point of view, who owns my digital persona? I think that, to me, is the most interesting part. You know, if you think about it, you know, I could go out and onto the internet and I could generate a digital persona of Brittany that in many ways are like you, but they're not you. And so who owns that? And it's highlighted in this particular case because the sister probably had more right to use that digital persona more than anybody else in the courtroom.
Hmm.
But once she opened the door, what happens if the defendant then wants to create a digital persona of the victim?
Mm.
You know, I can see if I were going to be on the other side of this case representing somebody in a sentencing hearing, I would want to narrow that scope down of the storytelling. You know, if we could just narrow the scope down to that one incident where the road rage incident happened, It tells a very different story. And is that fair?
Do you think there might be cultural impacts if posthumous AI in or out of court becomes more common?
Even just stepping out of the courtroom, right? The story makes me reflect a lot on mortality and AI's role in possibly changing kind of what it means to grieve and remember. One tidbit that stuck with me from talking to Stacey was how badly she wanted to include her brother's chuckle in the video. Apparently, it was a big hallmark of who he was, but all the clips of Chris laughing were too noisy to work with. And the whole ordeal made her actually go into a closet and record a 9-minute video of herself talking, laughing, enunciating certain words so that her family wouldn't have the same struggle she did if it ever came down to it.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And I think in that way, this story kind of isn't all that different from another movement that we're seeing with the rise of AI, which is to use this technology to find closure with a dead loved one or even to prepare for our own demise.
That's an aspect of this that makes everything so complex to me. I mean, to be honest, it's hard for me to know how to feel about this. I'm glad it gave Chris Pelkey's sister closure and their family closure. In my own life, I've had a friend pass away and like another friend used AI to remake a really beautiful photo of them in a way that like was very heartwarming and very comforting and very soothing and really celebratory. And so I understand how that works. But on the other hand, like I wonder if there are further ethical implications, you know, we should think about as a culture before using this tech more in our courts. Personally, I would only trust like one or two people to speak for my views after my passing. And I would never want AI to speak for me, even though, I mean, there's like probably thousands of hours, I'm sure, out in the world at this point of me running my mouth. They might be able to build a pretty good learning machine based upon things that I've already said. But I could see in other cases a family using AI to speak for a victim in ways they wouldn't want in court. Yeah.
Yeah. What concerns me, you know, if I go back and look at things that I wrote or said 10 years ago, I'm not the same person I was then. And if you were to build that avatar based on all of those past interviews and writings, you know, how accurate would it really be? I happened to be redoing my will when I was having this conversation with you guys. And,
oh, wow.
And I decided I'm going to add a statement in there that says, this is who I want in control of my digital persona once I pass away.
Wow. These are things I never thought I'd have to think about. But you raise a very good point, Brandon. Gosh, thank you both so much. I really appreciate this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me.
That was NPR digital reporter Juliana Kim and Brandon Blankenship, assistant professor at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And I'm going to put on my influencer hat for a second and ask you to please subscribe to this show on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you're listening. Click follow so you know the latest in culture while it's still hot. This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by
Liam McBain.
This episode was edited by
Nina Patak.
Our supervising producer is
Barton Girdwood.
Our executive producer is
Verilyn Williams.
Our VP of programming is
Yolanda Sanguini.
All right, that's all for this episode of It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Brittany Luce. Talk soon.